welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS newsletter. I'm joined with Lauren Gibbons, Simon Schuster, TJ Buchholz, and John Roerink. I'm Kyle Malin. Who watched the 2020 episode last night? Raise your hand. Lauren had a viewing party. I know she did. I couldn't watch it.
I didn't host it. I was invited. And I was one of fellow attendees, was the woman, the myth, the legend, Emily Lawler.
We love Emily Lawler, don't we? She did a great job, too, by the way. She made an appearance at the end. I was surprised to see her, but then I thought, wow, she added...
She had two little spots, didn't she?
She did, yeah.
Yeah, no, she was pretty good. Okay, so what was your takeaway from the 2020 special, Lauren?
It was mostly ridiculous.
All right, I wouldn't disagree with that. John, what was your takeaway?
I haven't realized, I guess I haven't watched 2020 in a while, but I didn't realize how much like America's Most Wanted their broadcast quality has become. It had a very tabloid feel to it.
I guess I kind of walked away with something similar to that. How sad is it that 2020 has kind of fallen to this? Like, I guess I thought it was a legitimate news broadcast, but yeah, it was just kind of this tabloid rehash while meanwhile Flint's burning. Detroit schools are falling apart. We don't have teachers who show up because they're declaring sick.
The narration and then a cutting to the picture of Todd rubbing Cindy's feet in that SUV. I think they cut to that six times during the course.
Well, because that was the only thing that they had, right? And you had to really squint to see that foot rub, didn't you?
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, just the puns that they were using, just so bad. I think there was one playing off of plain well. Like, this was neither plain nor well. And it's just like, what does that even mean?
And then nothing worse than a staffer scorned.
Yeah, well, apparently a lot of people like that one. I think I tweeted it, and a lot of people are, like, liking it or whatever. And I was just like, please, this is a joke. I tweeted it because it was a joke.
TJ, you haven't even watched it yet, have you? It's on your DVR, though.
I DVR'd it to watch it at some point, but, you know, I feel like, listen, when I'm at the grocery store and I'm checking out, I don't read the In Touch magazines while I'm waiting either. I think it's garbage. I think most of this sort of media format. I had posted something on Facebook on my personal page about that the only way that this would have been more tabloid fodder was if Dateline NBC would have run it with that creeper voice guy that Bill Hader does in Saturday Night Live. I think that we kick ourselves in the crotch a lot in Michigan, and we celebrate our failures way too much. And I got to the point where it's on my DVR, and I'm sure I'll watch it at some point, but I did not have watched it yet, and I may not.
You probably did a better use of time this weekend than I did.
Well, I'll never get that hour back.
That's true. But only thing I would say is, you know, certainly the production value, as John says, of those productions are dreadful. And I would say, you know, at some point you have to take your foot off the gas on this. And Kyle, you alluded to it. We have real problems in this state that need to address. And I certainly don't need to hear or be regaled on the tale of two horses' asses that were once in the legislature. We've got real issues to solve. And, you know, it sounds a little Sorkin-y, but we have real issues to solve here. And Courser Gamrat should be in the garbage can already.
Well, and it's old news, too, isn't it? I mean, we are so past Courser Gamrat. I mean, it was interesting in just about November, I guess, when they lost the election. But ever since then, it's kind of like we've all kind of moved on, haven't we?
Right. And I think the only piece of new or interesting information that a lot of people were noticing, you know, was right at the end where, you know, apparently Cindy is living in her car. And I think that's really the only thing that hasn't been...
Well, I mean, to be fair, you know, ABC, NBC, all even 60 Minutes, they have these run-ups that it takes them 3 months to go from ending to wrap a story to do post-production on it. I mean, I was watching 60 Minutes last night about the health truck, the doctor truck in the South that travels for people that don't have insurance, and they had a lot of individuals they were treating. And the very end of the piece, they said, you know, this individual died. There is a lot of lag time with those pieces.
No, I understand. Okay, well, let's talk about what maybe they could have talked about, which is now this Flint water crisis. And the question I want to throw on the table is, what is the biggest unanswered question so far in regards to this Flint water situation? Simon, I'm going to start with you.
I think for a long time, you know, lead poisoning was a national issue in the United States. And I think that within that frame of time, I'm certain that there has been some economic analysis done on the impact of lead poisoning in terms of the values lost from, you know, damaged intelligence or... you know, behavioral disorders that are causing, you know, bad economic outcomes for people. So I think it's only a matter of time before these sort of data is extrapolated to the residents of Flint. And I think when we're able to put a dollar sign on what we're looking at in terms of the damage to the residents long term, I think that that's going to change the game a lot.
All right. John, what do you see as the biggest unanswered question?
I really kind of want to see a bigger data set of the whole thing. I mean, we've had little snapshots here and there. We've had to do the details about the Walters family that had the really high lead reading. I'd like to see a kind of a history of the tests laid out in sequence, and even see some more tests that I don't think we're going to see, obviously, for a couple of months. But I'd like to see a comprehensive look at the data set for the whole incident, before, during, after. And I don't think that's really been...
Just to see how bad it was in various areas. Yeah, bad of a lead issue do we have?
Obviously, we know those two zip codes had bigger issues than others. Just, I think there's a tale to be told there as far as the data set. The other thing I think needs to be told a little bit better and maybe a little more coherently, we've had bits and pieces of it, but the story of the lead-up and the decision-making process as far as switching over to the Flint River, what was involved there, I know there was a lot of investment that was made in that processing plant. I'd like to learn more about that. There's just some more background information.
Lauren?
See, for me, I think the main question that lingers, you know, obviously now every single major news organization in the country has something on Flint. The New York Times, front page, Time, cover. And all these celebrities are talking about it and donating water and some money in some cases. And what I want to see is if the organizations that all the donations are coming to, if the nationwide media attention actually ends up getting the people who are most affected by this the help that they actually need. In a lot of national disasters that have previously happened, you know, in some cases, years after the fact, you still see the people who are most affected, which are generally the poor populations. A lot of times they don't get that help. And so what I would like to see is the organizations that are getting the bulk of these donations, if they have if they're getting the actual donations that they need, if they're getting enough money to address this problem, and then if they have the organization necessary to make sure that these kids and these families in these poor neighborhoods that are affected by lead poisoning are continuing to get that help in the years to come.
Or are we going to see these stories where we have this big warehouse and, oh, wow, look at all these filters. I never got to anybody. And,
right.
Oh, look at the water. And they're still in the, yeah, I see what you're saying.
That's the main concern, you know, because once the cameras go away, who's going to care? Yeah. That's the issue.
TJ, what's yours?
I agree with most of what's been said. I think it matters little of who knew what, when, how. I think that's out there a little bit. You know, I think that there hasn't been a complete release of emails associated with it. I'd like to see that happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm really concerned about two things. Really is, as has been said, making sure that the people of Flint now are getting the help that they need. And this is an issue that is going to linger through this governor's administration, the next governor's administration, and the next governor's administration. I mean, at minimum, just monitoring of populations that were exposed to heavy concentrations of lead is going to be a considerable issue for the state to consider. But I think there's a broader issue here, which I'm more concerned about, and I hope that raises some awareness. You say, what kind of good can come out of the Flint River crisis? And certainly not a lot of good can come out of it. But one thing that I would like the dialogue to change to in this city is infrastructure. We have major issues with infrastructure across the state. Last year we talked a lot about roads and bridges. I think we're already starting to see media pivot into their water system and sort of problems that they have in their own communities. You know, we have enormous infrastructure problems in this state that we refuse to address, our leaders refuse to address, because their hands are tied from a revenue perspective to some degree. We need individuals to roll up their sleeves, to check their politics at the door, and decide how we as a society are going to fix our infrastructure long term. If we are not willing to do that, Flint is just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. You should put that on a blog or something.
Yeah. Well, I wrote one for my company just about that.
I understand. Give it a little plug. Where can they see it?
It's just at our website, vanguard-pa.com. We also have Vanguard Public Affairs has a presence on Facebook, and we link all our blogs there.
Yes, I haven't given my unanswered question yet,
have
I?
What's yours?
I really want to have a little bit more attention on why we never had the anti-corrosive agent in the water in the first place. I guess I don't feel comfortable with the answers that we've been given. I understand that the DEQ is responsible, but who's running these plants that they're not putting it in the first place?
Yeah,
I mean, they've got some responsibility, don't they?
That just kind of goes to the unanswered story where I said there could be a better narrative leading into exactly the switchover, what was invested, who was running it. I mean, obviously, ultimately, the emergency manager in the state's responsible because the emergency manager's in charge. But
right.
He's not the one turning the levers. He's not the one making those decisions. It would be really good to have a clear narrative of exactly what happened. Not to lay blame as much, but to certainly understand exactly what happened.
The one thing that I would say, I'm not disagreeing with anybody, but let's just make this clear as a reminder, and I don't think we say this enough. This is not a natural disaster.
This is not an act of God. This is a
man-made disaster that was caused because why? Because someone in this pipeline, and I'm not going to say who or point fingers, but somebody valued money over people.
Or was this just reckless behavior? Or was this just indifference? Negligence?
Going back to TJ's point about infrastructure, I mean, think about it, though. Had we been making a systematic investment in our water systems, those lead lines would have been replaced by now. The switchover wouldn't have had that big of an issue. You would have had some points where there's copper on solder.
That's right.
But the lead lines are where the biggest issue is as far as this problem. And if we would address that over the last two decades, it wouldn't be an issue.
I mean, listen, if you have done any plumbing at your house and you've sweat pipes and you've worked on copper pipes, the solder that you've used very generally probably has lead in it. So, you know, to some degree, I'm not diminishing it at all, but to John's point, had we been on top of infrastructure needs, we wouldn't have the magnitude of problem that we have here. Oh, and I think if you could make an argument that municipalities would not be in the fiscal messes that they are if we got in front of what kind of needs needed to be addressed at the local level with their own issues.
I wouldn't disagree with that. The other thing I would like to see, and this isn't a question, this is just kind of an observation, is I would like to see more people accept the responsibility, whatever responsibility they had in making this whole thing happen. I think the governor has gone out of his way to accept his share of the blame, but I'd like to see other people accept their share of the blame too, instead of seeing Dane Walling try and kick a dead horse while it's down, and instead of, you know, on CNN. I'd like to see him take some responsibility for whatever role he had in this, and other officials and other people in Flint and the EPA or whatever, instead just letting Snyder take all the bullets when he is not the only one to blame on this.
I would tell you right now, the public with this situation has very little patience or tolerance for this game of political football that leaders are playing.
Oh, yeah.
It is time for those individuals to step up, accept responsibility, and I don't care what you did. What I care about is, what are you going to do to solve it? Mm-hmm. If you're not willing to step up and make important steps to solve it, then you might as well not be in office.
And I think the Free Press had an editorial, I think it was yesterday, said basically the same thing. It's time to stop the political firefight, and it's time to solve the problem.
All right. Well, we've got somebody on the other end of the line who is trying to help solve the problem. This is a gentleman who is the CEO of Zero Water, and I've never heard of this before, but this is a product that you can get at the store, and the only product that you can get at the store, where you will pour your tap water into a pitcher, kind of like Brita, and it will take the lead and other metallic substances out of your water. Doug Kellum is the CEO of this technology, and he's going to join us on the other end of the line.
Thanks for joining us on the program today.
Well, thanks for having me, Kyle. I appreciate it.
Tell our listeners what Zero Water is.
Well, Zero Water is in essence, it's a pretty simple product. It's a gravity-fed filtration product, just like, you know, some of the big ones on the market right now. We're newer products. It's been around several years. It's still the new kids on the block, but we use a different technology. It's a deionization technology. So it's very good at removing more stuff from the water, in particular for the situation in Flint. It's very good. It's one of the best known ways of removing heavy metals like lead from the water.
So how does this work? Do you guys put something right on the faucet, or do you connect your technology somewhere else within a home or a business?
No, this is really the simplest of forms of filtration you can buy. It's gravity fed. So it's a pitcher. Brita is the best way to describe it. Brita uses the same type of system in terms of being a gravity-fed filter where you put dirty water on top and you get clean water on the bottom. The big difference is the filtration technology. So ours is just I can get into the details if you want, but it's a very, very different filtration technique.
Tell us a little bit about the details. How is this different from like a Brita filter?
Well, the typical, and it's not just, I don't want to pick on Brita because, you know, Brita just happens to be the lion's share of the business out there. But conventional water filters used in pitchers like this, the simplest form of filtration, are generally largely carbon-based, which does a good job of removing a lot of things and freshening the taste of the water. And these some other additives, too, that help clean it even more. but they don't go to the extreme of what we've got. They usually have 2 to 3 different layers of product or elements to them. We have 5 basic layers to the product, and it is a layered filter. And we do have carbon, so we do a lot of the same things. But then we have what's called a mixed bed ion exchange resin, which is basically the same technology that nuclear power plants and nuclear submarines and pharmaceutical manufacturers use to purify the water prior to either using it again or using it in medicines, things like that. So the end result at the end of the filter is essentially the equivalent of purified bottled water. So it's got 0 parts per million of dissolved solids. Generally, the benefit you get out of that is you get a more pure taste. It just has a more pure taste to it. And the side benefit you get from it, in this case, the primary benefit, is the removal of heavy metals.
So in this case, it would get rid of lead.
Yes, it's the only gravity-fed, this simple filtration method. It's the only one that is actually certified by NSF to reduce lead down to safe levels.
So essentially, if we were to take one of your zero water filters and pitchers up to Flint, we turn on the tap anywhere, run the water through your zero water filter, and we just go ahead and drink the water and be good to go.
Absolutely. Yeah, they take the lead out.
So is this something that's on sale places? Is this a consumer product, or is this more for commercial customers?
No, it's a consumer product. It's a very simple consumer product. It's reasonably priced. It's more expensive than a Brita, but it's still, reasonably priced. The product's available at Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Bed Bath & Beyond, Meijer. Meijer's huge in Flint. I mean, there's pretty broad availability.
Okay.
Most of the places you would go to buy, simple water filter.
How often do you have to change out the filter?
That's a good question. With most filters, unlike ours, it's based more on time.
Mm-hmm.
But ours is actually based on how bad your water is to begin with.
Oh.
So if your water has a high concentration of dissolved solids, the filter won't last as long. For the average water, you'll get about 25 gallons out of a filter.
Okay.
Before it wears out. So, depending on how many people in your family and so on, for heavier users, that usually lasts a month, month and a half.
Talk a little bit about this program that you've got now with the United Way.
Sure. Back up just a little bit. We started getting involved with Flint back in October when it first really became, there was a high level of awareness. I know the issue goes back further than that, but it was kept pretty secret until September or October of 2015. As soon as we found out about it, we went over there and we did a joint press conference with the United Way and the school districts, and so we gave some filters and distributed some filters to the school system via United Way. And at the time, I've got 4 kids in elementary school, so I guess that's the main reason I jumped on it. It looked like a pretty noble cause, so we jumped in because it was the right thing to do. We happen to have this really. The beauty of it is our product is very simple, so it's a good catch-all for somebody that can't attach something to their faucet or such. This catches those people and makes sure that everybody has a way to remove lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it looked like the city decided to switch back to Lake Michigan water, and it looked like it was going to get better. But then it became clear over the last, I guess, month or so, that this thing is not getting any better. It may take who knows how many months to clear the water, to make the issue go away. There may be infrastructure projects that could cost, ungodly sums of money before this happens, and that could get held up for a long time. So this is going to be a longer-term issue. And we realized, being a smaller company, there's no way we would be able to support this the way we'd like to. And so what we came up with is an attempt to, it actually came from a zero water user in Florida, a retired professor, who called me and he said, "Hey, if I donate a few filters to Flint, will you guys match it?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" And then a couple of days later, we said, "Why don't we do this on a broader scale?" So we came up with this idea. We're calling it Filters for Flint, and we just launched it day before yesterday. And it's a one-to-one matching program. Anybody that buys a filter will buy another filter, and we'll ship it off to Flint, to the United Way, for the United Way to distribute through the established distribution system there, the emergency operations center. So So that's it in essence.
So if I go to Meijer right now and I buy one of your zero water filters, you guys will match my purchase. If I want to donate one to Flint, you guys will match that and send it over to the United Way, your own over to the United Way.
It's even simpler. You don't have to go anywhere. You can just it's actually easier to handle just by doing it on our website. You just go to our website. And there's a special page that you link to. It's the only thing on the homepage. Shows you where to go on this. And you go to that page, and you just pick the donation level, one filter, two filter, four filter, whatever. And you put your credit card information in, and then we record that. We charge your credit card. We add another filter onto it. And then we, at the end of each week, we aggregate all those filters and we send them to Flint.
So I just clicked on here. This is www.zero, spelled out Z-E-R-O, water.com. And there it is. It's right there on the front page there.
Yeah, so if you, hopefully it's up and running. There's no glitches on it. But if you click on the program, you'll see the sign-up sheet, and you can pick your donation level. I mean, the most popular donation, you know, understandably, is $15, which is one filter, which is great. It's not much money. It allows everybody to kind of get involved. The first night we launched this, we just sent it out to a lot of our users, you know, for those that we have emails for. And we got, I think it was a couple, 300 responses. But the winners so far, one gentleman donated almost $700 worth of filters.
Wow.
Which is fantastic. I mean, there's people out there that really care. I was joking around, maybe Cher will see this, or Michael Moore, and somebody will match with a million filters or 100,000 filters. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens.
The people who receive this, will they get one of these pitchers too? Because you need the pitcher,
well,
right?
You can donate. Well, two points to make there. One is, we've already distributed quite a few pitchers. So there's quite a few pitchers already out there. And there's still you know, a few thousand, I believe, pitchers at the emergency distribution centers and then operations centers. And also, you have the ability on this to donate a pitcher too, if you'd like.
Okay.
And if we see that it's too lopsided, that there's not enough pitchers out there, you know, we'll figure out a way to get some more pitchers to Flint.
Okay.
But the distribution system is in pretty good shape.
You know, this problem here with lead in the water, and obviously it's special to Flint in this case, but the whole issue of public infrastructures and the pipes that we use to get water from the treatment facilities to our homes, this isn't something that's special to Flint at all.
No, in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the reasons, kind of a side reason for this whole effort, is to increase awareness around the entire country. There's actually really solid awareness of the dangers of lead, but most people just think it's not their problem, that it's not something that could happen to them, because, you know, the municipality wouldn't send out water with lead in it. They don't understand that the lead is actually picked up on the way to your house, and there's plenty of old pipes all over the country. You're right. It's not just, I mean, Flint's problem is particularly bad, but there is lead in a lot of places.
And this is something that folks at who you know, are consumers of municipal water, and even if you have well water, I'm sure this is something that folks could be concerned about. If you feel like there's something in the water, there's metals or anything, and if you just want good tasting water, I tell you, I've been drinking water out of a filter for. Well, I've been using Brita since, I think, about 2000. I was a resident of the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, which I think had the foulest tasting municipal water I've ever tasted. And I just told my wife, I can't drink this stuff. And we got the Brita filter, and it's gone with me here to Lansing. I just can't drink anything else.
Well, I hope I can convert you to zero water.
Well, now you're making a real strong case, I got to tell you here, Doug.
Give it a shot. It is different. It is different, But the main thing is I really do want to encourage people to sign up and donate some filters and give us a chance to match. Our goal is to try to get enough filters into this program so that we can at least provide a, you know, good number of the households in Flint filters for as long as an entire year, so that you know, we can get through this issue.
Doug Kellum, he is the CEO of Zero Water. I appreciate the time today.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to the crew here, Simon and Lauren and TJ and John. Special thanks this week go out to Stu Sandler for hooking us up with about 24 donuts that Laura and I just completely destroyed our diets over.
Oh, yeah. I'm on a cleanse now.
Are you still on it? Did you go on that cleanse?
Oh, well, it started yesterday because on Saturday I just continued and ordered a pizza instead. So it started Sunday. We're official now.
But anyway, well, thank you very much, Stu, because without the donuts, Lauren and I and Jacob wouldn't have had any substance at all during our late nights.
I will just say, on Friday, I think I ate 3 donuts, and that was the extent of what I ate.
3 days out of DeLuca's pizza, though.
Oh my God, that's right. Yeah, thank you for the DeLuca's pizza. I had 3 meals off that DeLuca's pizza.
Yeah, so did I.
So basically, Lauren, we lived on donuts and pizza last week.
All week. It was so gross. I felt so gross this weekend. But then on Saturday, I just continued. I just couldn't stop. So Sunday, I was like, the buck stops with me.
I brought a whole head of chopped celery, just so you know. I'll put it in between our desks.
Yes. Chair. Yes. Sounds good.
All right. Until next week, I'm Kyle Moore. Take care. We'll be right back.